Hello and welcome to Market Muse, the show that provides access, insight, and guidance on how to best navigate the luxury real estate market in Southern California. I'm Warren Dow, publisher of Digs, and today we're here with Bob Sievers, former Wall Street hedge fund manager, discussing the market outlook for the Manhattan Sand section. We'll also give you some buyer and seller tips. So when we're talking about the market, you know, market trends, what's tell me about the current state of the market.
You know, obviously everybody knows we've had a great run up since the crash, if you will. There was some expectation and a little bit of trepidation last year that things were starting to, roll over.
Yeah.
And last summer we saw a couple of soft spots in different sections for various reasons. Mainly it was some oversupply from building. But there's been a resurgence actually this spring. And the market is extremely hot. There's a lack of inventory in the entire state of California, particularly at the beach. So to me, the market is as healthy as it could possibly be right now. And I would have no fear. I'm personally looking for properties myself. So
yeah.
I think the market's very, very much very healthy.
We're coming into sort of this the usual cyclical, right? 7 to 9 year real estate sort of cycle, right?
Yep.
We've got a new president.
Yep.
We've got a lot of sort of interesting global geopolitical things happening. What's your sort of outlook sort of today, and take us through the next, say, 12 to 18 months?
I encounter this a lot with buyers, particularly, that are worried that they just saw this thing happen, this generational crash that, you know, it was a horrible thing. A lot of people lost their homes and their livelihood. And there's a level of fear out there, as evidenced by the amount of money that's sitting in bank accounts making 0.0001%.
Right.
Meanwhile, inflation's running at 2%, so they're losing money. They don't even know it. So there's this idea, well, we've had this huge run-up. The crash is coming. It's coming again. And if you go back and study trends, and I think I mentioned to you once before, there was a Russian economist, Klondikiv, that did a study that showed that every real generation, you'll have these major cataclysmic events.
Yeah.
This over-leverage, wild speculation, where markets do get out of whack. And there's an ensuing, the Great Depression. It dates all the way back to Holland, you know, the 1500s in the tulip bubble. And there's these bubbles that generally occur. And it takes that generation that was there to feel all that pain to more or less grow old and die off before the conditions are ripe again for it to happen again.
Yeah.
Bring yourself fast forward from 1930, 2007, 77 years. That's right about, you know, if someone was 20 years old and saw that back then, they're right there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So these people, and again, back in that depression in the 40s, from research I've done, there was an expectation, we're going to crash again. We're going to crash again. Well, you know the story. Things just continued up. Think about this. The Dow was at 200 when the stock market crashed. It went down to 80. The Dow was at 21,000 now.
Yeah.
So when people ask me, when's the bull run going to end? I say, never.
Never, yeah.
The bull run's never going to end. Are there going to be corrections? For sure. If you're buying, if you're a flipper or a developer, it's always scary. What's the market like a year, year and a half from now? I'll be perfectly honest with you. I can't tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know. From everything I see right now, there's still a massive shortage of inventory. Inventory's up from last year for sure. There's roughly 100 listings in Manhattan Beach. Ironically, last summer, the trees, there was 40 some odd listings. Now there's 18.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened there, there was a lot of building. So it was a supply issue. It wasn't a demand issue. It was just there was a lot of building. There was a lot of supply in the market, a lot of choices. Things got slow. They didn't really go down. They dipped a little bit.
Yeah.
And now they're hot and you can't find something in the trees. And flip-flop right now in the sand section. There's more there. A lot of it because some were strand properties. But the point being, there's going to be these little aberrations, these minor ebbs and flows. Then you're going to have your sort of every decade or so interest rate driven slowdown, 10, 15, 20% corrections. If you're buying real estate for the long term.
Yeah, it's just like the stock market, right? The advice never changes. Is there There's no perfect timing. There's no good time. You get in, you hold, and it, if you look at the chart, you know, it's doing this, it's bouncing, but it's going up and up and up. So when you started, so when you said, I'm going to be a, you know, a realtor, I'm going to focus on these areas, how did you look at it like sort of the stock market, like you're going to focus, you're going to be a niche player?
Absolutely.
So tell us about that.
So specialization to me is everything. I mean, there are so many agents, realtors, that if you look at their area of coverage, it's from Timbuktu to, you know, the border of Mexico, and you can't know everything about. I mean, I'll readily admit, I cannot cover well Torrance, San Pedro, you know, Marina del Rey, some of these areas, and so I've chosen to specialize. I've chosen to take an area that's small enough that I can go a mile deep and not too wide, rather than be an inch deep and you know, 20 miles wide, and claim to cover everything. And that's the value added that I bring. The proposition, the value proposition is simply, I know, I can tell you about every house you're looking at. I've been through it.
Yeah.
I've looked online. I mean, I get to the point where, and sometimes my memory does slip and I think, I haven't seen it. Oh yeah, I have seen it. So I actually go on the MLS every day and go through all the properties that are for sale in my area and just go through them again and again and again and again. And that's the time that most people are spending prospecting.
Yeah.
But I feel like what I miss in making cold calls or door knocking, which I'm not a fan of, I make up for in knowledge, because if you don't have a value proposition, then you're a contract writer. You're a person who scratches something out for 45 days, which is why you hear people say, well, these guys are overpaid. But what I help my clients understand is you're not just paying for the next 60 days that I'm going to be working with you once we're in escrow and however many days before that it took to buy or sell your house. But you're paying for that time that I'm spending day in and day out, so that I can give you something, a level of, you know, higher than what someone might do. You know, I got a listing in Torrance, let's look it up. I've never done a transaction in Torrance. I don't look at it. I mean, I'm happy to refer it out. So.
And the real value, I mean, the meaningful value proposition is not what's for sale, what's coming for sale. It's really understanding the dynamics, you know, the price dynamics, inventory dynamics. You know, because these are multi-million dollar transactions, and you can make good decisions or you can make bad decisions.
Absolutely. I mean, looking at, you know, several of the factors, depending on whether you're a buyer or a seller, but as a seller, nailing that price is important. And I think that's misunderstood. A lot of people think, well, the market will find the price, and the market will find the price. But if you overprice a home, and you start walking it down, and I've seen it, and I've taken advantage of it on the buy side, these listings become stale, and there's a perception that that's not a property we want to look at, or it's forgotten because people are always looking at the new stuff. So when someone's listing a home, nailing that price, in a hot market, you can sort of price it at zero, and the market's going to find the price, sort of like eBay. You put something on for $5 that, you know, sells for $1,000, it's in essence an auction. But if it's not a perfect property or it's not a hot market, that strategy necessarily doesn't always work. So I think one of the things that's extremely important is being able to identify price. And this is what I did for more than two decades on Wall Street. Day in and day out, I had to make a value judgment. What's this thing worth?
Yeah.
Because as one of my roles in being a hedge fund manager or whatnot was to buy and sell stock from institutions. And if someone came to me with a large piece of stock, I had to decide what's it worth? What's it worth at this minute? Because things change too. And real estate prices change notionally day to day. Just like the stock market, you see these jiggles. Those jiggles are still happening. They're just, no one sees it. So to be able to identify, you know, hey, what's for sale down the street? There's another one down the street that's XYZ price. We've got a price that's slightly competitive to that. So that's one of the big value propositions I feel I bring is really knowing what things are worth. And you can't know what something's worth in an area that you're not familiar with.
And you just had a monster sale in Manhattan, yeah?
Yeah, it's 716 The Strand, originally listed for 12.9. There was a recent comp just before it for $14 million and another one for 14.5. They were off market on literally a block away. All three were dirt sales. So it was just dirt value. So ostensibly, you would think they'd sell in somewhat the same price. Well, the market for the Strand was getting a bit softer only because there was more inventory coming online. So they listed it at 12.9. It sat. I told my clients about it. My client, one of the biggest developers in North America, Onicorp, they recently bought the Manhattan Towers over there off Rosecrans, $97 million transaction, built level hotel, huge, huge, very, very savvy, very smart people. And they're patient. And I was looking for, the principal there wanted a second or third or whatever home it may be, because he spends a lot of time in LA. So they wanted something on the Strand, but regardless of what they have, they're smart and they want value. So originally we looked in El Porto, and there was a double there, and we went back and forth with them and couldn't come to terms. And so that property, as I mentioned, listed at 12.9, reduced to 11.5. Still nothing. I let them know about it. They were thinking about it at 11.5. Right around the holidays, I'm in a networking group, and in that it's with some of the very top agents in Manhattan Beach. One of the agents there mentioned they're shopping this thing below 10 million. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing, because you got to comp it for 14 right. million. Believe me, I can't do this every time. To buy something at 30, 40% discount to market, it's just incredible. However, there was a situation where sellers wanted out, and it was a time of year where things were quiet, and we got in there and made an offer. And had I not been in the networking group and not had that information, and I had not been working with a savvy client that 100% trusted to me when I went to work for this client, he said, "You're our guy. We're value minded," which is why they were looking at El Porto, because the relative value of El Porto to South Strand was about 2-1. So you can buy dirt in El Porto for 6, mm-hmm. and at the time you were between 12 and 14 million on the South Strand. Mm-hmm. That gap had really grown. At one time it was something closer to maybe a 50 to 60% differential. So it was sort of a reversion to the mean. And these are the types of things, again, you don't see it a lot out there where people are aware of even these statistics at all.
So this is like the, you know, Jim Cramer, buy, buy, buy.
This is the Jim Cramer, buy, buy, buy. Right. I mean, they were immediately, their interest was peaked, and we put together a great deal, came in all cash, closed at $9.3 million.
Nice.
And it's interesting because in the meantime, there's been sort of a slew of Strand listings. There's been a lot of, it's been only the sort of weaker part of the market in the South Bay. And it's a temporary thing. It just so happens that, you know, it got a little ahead of itself. We sort of pulled it back to the mean. We got a fantastic deal just recently right down the street. Another one just went in escrow for, I believe, $12 million. So we bought that property, I believe, at about a $2 to $3 million discount to what it could go for just today. And we only closed in January.
Sort of the principle of scarcity, right? How many homes are on the Strand from the Esplanade and Redondo to El Porto? I mean, there's only a fixed number.
They're not making any more of it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money, as you well know. There's a lot of very successful entrepreneurs, successful tech people moving into the area. And if you want to live near the beach and you want to live in Los Angeles, you have one choice.
Yeah.
That's the South Bay. You can go up to Malibu and drive for hours and get stuck in traffic. The whole Santa Monica area, it's all parking lots. So we've got this very unique section of real estate that has become sort of the crown jewel of the, you know, south the LA area. So
yeah, and there's always going to be a lifestyle premium that's factored into real estate here,
right?
Without a doubt,
for sure.
And that could be, you know, up to 50%.
Oh, absolutely.
Know?
Where else can you walk out your door? Trot down to the beach, jump in the water, skate along the Strand, go find a restaurant. I mean, there are so many pluses, and it's such an attractive area that I think that the outlook for real estate in general, but specifically South Bay real estate, is ridiculously bright.
And where else can you sell $10 million Strand homes wearing surf trunks and sandals?
Gotta love it.
What specific advice, getting back to the sort of the change in the market, you know, and these buyers and sellers are more sophisticated, mm-hmm. right? So it's sort of harder for them to maybe understand the true unique value that you bring, mm-hmm. because they're so educated and sophisticated now, right? So tell us like some of the nugget advice that you could give to a buyer, even a first-time home buyer, or, you know,
Well, that's a great question, because I do work with several first-time buyers, and I see a sort of a pattern. And what I would suggest is, A, do what they're already doing, which is they do this naturally, this generation. They go to the internet. They learn everything they can about it.
Right.
Then take it one step further. Don't be afraid of having that buyer's meeting. So many people avoid that buyer's meeting, A, because they don't want to commit to one agent, as I spoke about before. Find out what isn't on the internet from a professional that's done it.
Yeah.
I see often going through an escrow, people surprised about, oh, this is coming up. I didn't know this was going to happen. Sit down with your agent, choose one, sit down with that agent, have that 30 to 45 minute buyer's meeting, and have that agent take you from the day you start looking, the day you close escrow. Because there's a lot of things that either it is not entirely accurate there or isn't there. What happens at the inspection? What happens if there's cost of repairs and this and that? And so to take you from looking to closing, that I can't emphasize enough. It's an important thing to do.
So let me sort of reverse the tables here. What kind of questions do you think sellers, for instance, should be asking their agents before they list or to hire them?
How well do you know the area? How many houses have you sold in this area? If you're really savvy and you're a seller and you might want to do a little research, find out about a few houses that sold them and ask them a question.
Yeah.
See if you catch them off guard.
Mm-hmm.
If you see your agent stumbling, going, well, I'll get back to you, they don't know the area.
If you know more than they do, then there's trouble, right?
Right. So, I mean, that's what I would do if I was selling. I would sort of try and test their knowledge. See if it's a smokescreen or not. Ask about their background. Ask what they did before they were in real estate. Find out what their skill set is. Are they just a guy that they went to school with, gal that they went to school with, your brother-in-law, or is it somebody that really knows that area? Also, ask about what areas they cover.
Yeah.
I can't emphasize enough how important specialization is. I think that's the number one value proposition that I bring, besides my financial background, is the fact that I'll take a small area and I'll know it like no one else. And if you're a seller, that can mean, you know, a lot of times you'll have a seller say, well, you know, can you knock a percent off the commission? You can affect the sales price by 5%+ already just by pricing intelligently, also knowing how to correctly present the house. And that's a question to ask. How much do you spend on marketing?
Mm-hmm.
I know agents that spend very little. And one of the propositions for earning the full commission that I'll ask for is the fact that, you know, I do it. I'll put a full page ad in Digs, full paid ad here. Make sure that there's not an eyeball anywhere that hasn't seen this, and internationally as well.
Thanks for tuning in. Look for more Market Muse episodes coming soon. Check out our podcast on iTunes, and we welcome your questions and suggestions for future episodes in the comments below. Like, comment, and subscribe. Thanks for hanging with us.